You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Child Poverty Action Group is calling for better monitoring of private rentals, as new research reveals the share of affordable rentals has decreased significantly over the last 5 years. However, the national trend saw a consistent share of private rental housing in Auckland and Christchurch compared to other regions. This is part and due to increased home projects in those regions. The Child Poverty Action Group is advocating for the need to increase public housing builds in all regions, stating the government prioritises 1- and 2-bedroom housing over rental housing. I spoke with Greg White of the Child Poverty Action Group about the decrease of affordable rental shares.
Why is New Zealand rental market so unaffordable?
That's a big question. It goes back a long way. The very first starting point is the 87 stock market crash. And while most countries recovered, New Zealand was quite a small market and the share market stayed down for a long time. And so people were reluctant to get back into shares, and decisions were taken, I guess, around tax policy, which encouraged a move into property. And ever since then, we've had relatively unusual policies. So you'll have noticed the debate about the capital gains tax. Should we have one? Shouldn't we have one? And everyone's very wary. In most countries, capital gains tax on properties, with an exemption for a residence that you live in and up to a cap, maybe $1 million or whatever, are pretty common. So without policies like that, you've just seen a huge amount of investment pour into property rather than productive investment. And when I say property, it's property for resale profit because, you know, the profits are tax-free in most cases. There was a estimate very recently that people who'd bought into property for investment had taken out $511 billion in the time since around 1990 in New Zealand. $511 billion, I mean, it's extraordinary. So that's kind of locked into your house prices. And once house prices go up, eventually it has to flow through into rent. So New Zealand has had extraordinarily expensive property prices, and the capital gains sustained it for a while. You know, rents didn't go up as quick as property prices. But at some point, and this is usually when the capital gains run out, which is kind of the point we're at now, investors are sitting on 1.2 million houses and $1.2 million houses in Auckland and trying to rent them out. And in the end, you can put that money in the share market. So you start hiking the rents at higher and higher rates, which is what we've seen more recently. Since about 2019, the quarterly rent rise, that's every quarter, is 1.2%, which is nearly 5% a year. So I would say that we're still not at the end of this.
In your report, it stated that the government favours 1- and 2-bedroom housing. Why is this?
You know, we're very slowly moving to address issues that other countries have probably addressed earlier. So the current government has, I guess, an emphasis on retaining the same support for landlords with the return of the large tax subsidies for interest rates. But specifically, they've shifted the ground a bit on the planning side. So, you know, all countries have planning constraints and they do slow down the production of new houses, denser housing, more affordable housing, smaller housing, you know, which is a new thing that has to supplement our previous reliance on, you know, large 3- and 4-bedroom houses that we built through the post-war period. So the changes they've made were to emphasise long-term goals for local government, 30-year targets, and that's a good thing. You know, it'll mean that there'll be more land released. But they did make the earlier cross-party agreement on urban densification optional for councils. So the net effect there is, one, to break with that kind of cross-party approach, which keeps policies consistent over time and, you know, helps markets kind of deliver and adjust to change. But potentially we might see more what they call greenfields development, you know, large blocks of land in the outer areas of the cities being released. And what you tend to see there without any other policies in place is building of upmarket houses, you know, once again, higher quality, higher margin, higher profit on houses built for wealthier people. Whereas we really do need higher density in the inner city areas and quality new builds.
Why has Auckland and Christchurch remained affordable?
Auckland and Christchurch, well, Auckland's not affordable. The kind of headline message in the paper is that the regions are going backwards. They're actually seeing quite substantial losses of affordable rental. A combination of factors, you know, redevelopment, demolition of old houses to build newer houses, which are often, you know, more expensive. But in the big cities, there are some gains, but of course they're from a very low base. You know, everyone would know that Auckland or Wellington are very expensive cities. And so the good thing there is that the new builds, the kind of smaller apartments that you're seeing built, are adding to the affordable stock, and you see some small increases. And changes in housing markets kind of move through stages, I suppose. So you see house prices go up first in the big cities, and then you see a follow-on effect as that investment kind of takes all the easy gains in the big cities, and then investors spread out to the regions, and the regions are small, and then you see prices explode there, and rents follow a similar pattern, which is also aggravated by the fact that, you know, a good many people find it's just too impossible to live in the cities. And so you see population pressures in the regions as well, and that pushes up demand. So Christchurch is unusual in that, of course, the earthquake caused an enormous loss of housing and a big influx of builders and a lot of development of affordable rental. It's quite high quality, I would say, on average in Christchurch, but it was pushing the envelope too. They, you know, they built things that often didn't have on-site car parking, for example. And that would, you might see negatives in that, but you would also be able to rent those places for more affordable rents. You'd be able to purchase them if you're an investor to rent and still be able to get charged tenants an affordable rent. So that's why Christchurch has seen significant gains, and of the major cities, it has, you know, somewhat more affordable rental. Wellington takes the cake of the big cities being the least affordable, having, I guess, the smallest share of affordable rental in the market. Just to explain that, that's what this research was about. It wasn't so much looking at can the person sitting in this house afford it, but it was looking at the changes in the stock of private rental. All those houses that are out there, if you look at, define a benchmark for what's affordable at a particular income, and this research is looking at people on lower wages, somewhere between the minimum wage and the living wage, and is the share of that rental market that would be affordable to them gaining or growing or shrinking over the last 5 years.
In your study, you found countries like France, Portugal, and Hungary had policies of increased home ownership. What do you believe that these countries are doing right?
Well, yes, that's the next stage. I'll have to have a bit of a look, and there'll be diverse answers. Housing policy is complex. You need quite a good balanced suite of policies. If you went back 30 years, you would say New Zealand needed a capital gains tax. You wouldn't even think about it. That would have been the right thing to do. And then, you know, we might have invested more in the productive economy, and we might have seen investment in housing go towards building, say, you know, a balanced suite of new housing if we'd incentivised that, but we didn't. So these countries will have a range of policies. They might be inclusive zoning. That's something that Queenstown was forced to do, for example, because they simply didn't have places for the people who worked in the cafes, the shops, you know, on ordinary wages to live. because there were, you know, too many people moving down there into upmarket houses and displacing all the affordable rental. So if you do a major development in Queenstown, you have to build some housing at the smaller, denser end of the scale as well, not just, you know, big mansions for wealthy movie stars or whatever. There's quite a range of other policies that you could do. At the high end, I guess, I mentioned that maybe the capital gains tax isn't the right thing now. You're starting to see countries talk more about, and three OECD countries now have a wealth tax. So that's often a flat tax on wealth on an annual basis. And obviously the idea there is to bring in some revenue that can be directed towards incentivising affordable housing, whether that's social or privately built. You know, it's a big problem and you do need to gain some revenue to fix it. Also, policies are trying to, I guess, have a bit more progressivity in an unequal world, trying to tax people on higher incomes a bit more so that you can still afford to have necessary services.
And that was Greg White of the Child Poverty Action Group talking to us about the decrease of affordable rental shares, as well as other countries' methods of increasing rental affordability.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.